Coming up on Tech News Today, happy middle-aged birthday to Apple. We meet the Tesla Model 3 finally. Reddit's canary is silenced. Google sends animated GIFs to your boss, and so much more. Tech News Today is next.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by Cashfly at cachefly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1483, recorded Friday, April 1st, 2016. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter promo code TNT for 30% off your entire order. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Tech News Today, the show where we talk about some of the biggest tech news stories with people who are passionate about technology. I happen to have a couple of those people, of said passionate people around technology, right next to me. Of course, Florence Ion from Greenbot and All About Android, the show that I do outside of this show. And then Ron Richards of All About Android.
It's an All About Android. It's an All About Android trifecta.
Wait, this isn't All About Android?
No, I'm sorry. I totally called
you guys.
I was wondering why we were
sitting in a different spot.
On a Friday.
I was confused.
He asked us
but
here.
But now this
here.
Makes much more sense.
Yeah. This is kind of the thing we do on Fridays. Tuesdays, of course, is All About Android. That's when we do the Android thing. We've got a couple of Android-y things.
So we are going to talk about Android.
The funny thing about all of us doing All About Android is that we actually know things that are interested in things other than Android as well,
strange.
Too. Like in fact,
some
I was,
of us.
I think you'll surprise even yourself.
You'll surprise yourself. I mean, the thing is, as much as I love Android, it's been, what, 6 years or so? We were into tech many years before that.
That's true. Yeah, so, our love of Android is based on a foundation of tech that by many years superseded that.
It's like my other show that I do on my own, iFanboy, which is about comic books. A lot of that audience thinks that all I only care about are comic books.
He also cares about Android.
Yes, and other things.
Yes,
and 90210.
Evidenced by today.
Thank God. This is why we get along. This is the only reason we get along.
this is the whole little kumbaya thing that on the periphery of like.
Everyone thinks we hate each other.
No.
All right, so let's talk about things that aren't Android.
Let's do it.
First, today is April 1st, and you know what that means.
April 4th.
Yep, it's Apple's birthday.
That's right.
And not only that, the company is officially middle-aged, today marking its 40th birthday. No matter how you feel about the company, it's nearly impossible to deny just its influence on the world of technology and its ability to do things like redefine categories. I've seen that a lot. There have been a number of awesome retrospectives posting today that are definitely worth taking a look at to get a sense of how far the company has come over the past 40 years. But I don't know. I feel like the big story over the past few years has been Tim Cook, obviously.
Oh, yes.
A large part of Apple's success, for almost the entirety of the 40 years was while Steve Jobs was alive. It was based on his vision. So we're only a couple of kind of short years into Tim Cook's tenure. Is it too early to tell whether his influence will have the same kind of dynamic power over the company going forward as Steve Jobs has had up until now?
No. It is not too early to tell.
And what do you think about that then?
I from what I've seen from Tim Cook thus far, like, he's a much different leader than Steve Jobs was. And I mean, yes, I do love the world of Android, but I've been a part of the Apple world for quite a long time. And I've seen, like, Steve Jobs' leadership and his tenure. And I like Tim Cook. I just think he's a great, like, breath of fresh air from what we had going on. And also with this whole, like, DOJ thing that was going on the last couple of weeks, it's been really amazing, seeing him come out.
His activism.
Seeing him come out for that. Right. I agree, because I think up until the DOJ issue and up until the encryption question and all stuff like that, I found Tim Cook to be very saccharine and just kind of like the guy after Steve Jobs, and they've done a lot of things that Steve Jobs would have approved of. Silas.
Silas that sticks into the bottom of the tablet out here.
But until the stand that they took with Tim Cook as the face of that stand against the DOJ and protecting users' rights with the encryption, I think that's really his defining moment.
Yeah.
And I think that it's I agree with, you know, I agree with you, but I also agree with Jason in that up until now, it's too early to tell what his legacy will be, because honestly, the shadow that Steve Jobs casts is enormous, because you pull anyone on the street and say, who's Tim Cook? And you won't get an answer. I bet you the majority of people won't know who Tim Cook is. That's you say, who's Steve Jobs? And they do. But that takes a lifetime to do.
Sure.
That said, you know, happy birthday to Apple, and like you, Flo, and I imagine my first computer was an Apple II Plus. First computer I ever used was an Apple II Plus. First computer I took apart was an Apple II Plus. First computer I put back together was an Apple II Plus. First computer I programmed on was an Apple II Plus. So, like,
it sounds like you did a lot with an Apple II Plus.
I did a lot with that Apple II Plus. And then once I got that 64K installed, that expansion memory, it was just off to the races. But, I love that machine. It was great.
I had the SE.
Yeah, I didn't have a Mac until 2007. I went Apple II Plus, and then I went directly to PCs, and I was in PC land and from the late 80s until 2007.
I feel like that's everybody's, not everybody, but I feel like it's a lot of people's history with Apple.
Yeah, I did desktop publishing on an SE. Did a fanzine.
I did.
And I was just amazed that I had the power to do it, you know?
You could do that with a PC. I did my fanzine. Quark on my PC.
Claris Works was so easy. Oh. Drag and drop. I used to make all my own little newspapers. Yeah. Even my mom would take the work.
Yeah. Definitely have to say, Harry McCracken has an awesome kind of a lengthy read about Regis McKenna, who's Apple's first kind of media strategist, has all this old documentation on kind of their strategy for how they're, you know, doing just Apple PR and advertising plans, all that kind of stuff in the very beginning. It's a super long read, worth your time kind of scanning through at the very least to kind of see the kind of the historical stuff in there. But
It's an American institution. It's a great testament to entrepreneurship and to, you know, and tenacity and all that stuff. And I mean, clearly, I mean, I've been on like three flights in the past month where I've just watched 45 minutes of the Danny Boyle, Steve Jobs movie.
Oh my gosh. I still haven't seen any of that.
Oh, I saw it in the theater.
45 minutes.
Well, I saw it in the theater, but I keep seeing the same first, because the flight to LA is very short. Okay. But, I saw it in the theater, but I mean, just watching that as well too just shows the legend that Apple has become, you know. And it's not just Steve Jobs; I mean, Steve Wozniak and everybody that has been involved in it. So it's a great story
for sure.
Happy birthday!
Of course, you may.
If it was not for Apple, I would not be an Android user.
I'm sure that's the case for a lot of people.
So,
well, explain that. So, if it was not for Apple,
this is not for you being contrary to the iPhone.
Exactly. So, in college, everybody had, you know, the iPod, and I was trying really hard. Like, I just want to be different, and so that's how I found Android.
Which is ironic.
Think different.
I know. Yeah. Right. I was thinking about that slogan today too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, how about this kind of, you know, other influential entities, let's say, in the continuing saga of whether BlackBerry can turn things around comes today's earnings report that revealed BlackBerry sold only 600,000 phones in the fourth quarter. That's 250,000 less than Wall Street's expectations, 100,000 less than what it sold in the third quarter. The BlackBerry Priv is the company's first Android device in light of the end of kind of the BlackBerry OS. The future of BlackBerry's hardware business very much hinges on the success of the Priv, and they've also projected another 1 to 2 Android handsets expected to be released sometime this year. Chen has said that they're looking into a mid-range price device to compete because the high-end market is just so saturated. The Priv costs $699, which I have to imagine that's part of the reason why, right? Like, that's a pretty darn expensive handset, no matter how you slice it, no matter who you are.
That was my big beef with it when I reviewed it for Greenbot and PC World. I was just like, this is too expensive for what you're getting for this new sort of experience with the slide-out keyboard. It's a new thing. I don't discount it. I think it's a great phone, actually. I just don't think it's worth $600.
Yeah, is there a reason that it isn't resonating the way that maybe it needs to?
BlackBerry's dead. I mean, that's the sad thing. I mean, the company's still around. They're still releasing it. Yeah. But as a brand,
there's no marketing behind it either.
It is a dead brand. Well, no, I've seen marketing in the field. Like, okay. I haven't seen much marketing.
Yeah.
I can't remember where, but I did see. And I was like, oh, BlackBerry, look at that. Like, I forget where it was. It's the thing from the mid-2000s that went away, and as a culture, we have moved on, unfortunately.
Right, that was long enough for us to kind of forget.
Yeah, maybe. Exactly. Yeah, and I'm not, these sales numbers, I'm not surprised at all. I'm surprised that they sold 600,000 phones. I'm not surprised that they didn't meet their expectations or sell the close to a million that they wanted to. It's over. Mm-hmm. You know, and I've said this on All About Android. Like, them moving to Android, it's too little too late. They needed to move 5 years ago, and they didn't.
So, yeah.
Chen does hold to the fact that BlackBerry cut their operating loss by half, so at least there's that. BlackBerry needs
we didn't
to
lose
sell,
that much money.
I know, right, exactly.
Yeah, we didn't lose that much.
They need to sell 3 million phones to break even this year, so tall order. I don't know. I don't even know if lower cost hardware is going to be enticing enough, because I think you're right. I think there's a little bit
there's too much competition in that space.
At this point, I mean, I am not an investment person. I know nothing about M&A, but at this point, if I was in charge of BlackBerry, I would put them on the block, find someone who wants the technology that they do have, that there's some value, and just get out and kill the brand and move on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So sell it to HTC, sell it to OnePlus. So,
HTC and BlackBerry, that's an interesting combo.
Yeah, you know, but just kill the brand.
That's a hard brand to kill, though.
No, it's not. This is genius. Here you go. This is what you want to do, BlackBerry. I'm going to give you the marketing plan.
All right,
you are going to sell the company, all right, and whomever you're going to sell to, then you're going to have a very public funeral and wake, and you're going to put it to rest, and then at the same time release a new product and with a new brand, and then go from there and build anew. Because trying to reap the rewards of BlackBerry's success 10 years ago isn't going to do anything.
They should try and do what Motorola did.
Yeah.
Although that didn't... Oh, I don't know how that's going to fare now that this whole Rick Ostro leaving Motorola. So I don't know how that's going to fare. I'm really upset about Rick Ostro leaving Motorola. Rick, call me.
Maybe they just need to shorten their name to Barry.
Yeah.
It's the new BlackBerry. Yeah. Called Barry
or
now.
BB.
Yeah, there we go.
That's so cute.
Last night at the bright-eyed and bushy-tailed time of 10 p.m. Pacific, 1 a.m. Eastern, Elon Musk finally revealed the Tesla Model 3 to the world. This is Tesla's first lower-cost mass-market car. The previously announced price tag of $35,000 gets you, I think, a pretty sporty-looking four-door sedan. Has some characteristics of the Model S, but definitely in a more compact body. It fits five adults comfortably, says Elon, due to expanded front seat space, compressed instrument panel. The instrument panel looks actually pretty sweet. Yeah. It does have some of the semi-autonomous features included, things like automatic lane changing, lane keeping, a whole bunch of other things. Musk also said Tesla doesn't make slow cars. The 3 goes from 0 to 60 miles per hour in less than 6 seconds.
And also the key metric on this car is that on one single charge it can travel 215 miles.
Yes.
Which is the critical mass point for electric cars to break into the masses.
That's pretty great.
And in fact, it's interesting because there was an article, the cover story of Wired a couple issues ago was about how GM beat Tesla to the affordable electric car, how the Chevy Bolt was going to hit market before the Tesla Model 3, and it can do 200 miles and at the similar kind of price tag. What's funny, though, is that I have not seen anyone in my social media feed talking about putting a pre-order on a Chevy Bolt, whereas yesterday I lost count of my friends who were like, just put my deposit down on a Tesla Model 3.
Because it's so easy to drop. I mean, easy in air quotes.
It's only
relatively easy
bucks.
To drop $1,000 to do that.
I mean, yeah, if you want
it. I mean, one of my friends down in L.A. waited in line. She was 124th in line and got it in super early. You know, people are excited about this, and this is the moment. I think Tesla's been great up to this point, but it's been a vanity product. But now that they've got they supposedly have a car that can go 250 miles on one charge. That's a game changer.
So how does this charge? I mean,
well, you plug it.
I know, but I'm thinking, like, how long does it take to charge? Like, do we really have the infrastructure to sort of?
Well,
like,
okay, so super, it's supercharge capable. So, and that basically is, I can't remember exactly how fast that is, but Tesla's adding all of these superchargers around. I think they said they're adding another 3,600 supercharger stations and four times as many destination chargers. Right. And that's places like, you know, go to a hotel and they have a charger there.
So you're like, road trip, let's go stay at this hotel.
Like, right. A parking garage has charging stations.
Oh, but that's even more. But it's interesting is that with the 215-mile capacity on a single charge, is that the need to charge becomes less. Because, like, case in point,
assuming
the Petaluma parking garage didn't have chargers and assuming I was driving a Tesla Model 3, I could drive to the city and back.
That's true.
And not have to worry about a charge, you know, because I'm going to have the charging station at home. So, yeah.
That's
being able to go 200 miles and then finding a supercharge station at one of all these spots, I mean, if you live in Texas, you're in trouble. But there are a lot of gaps there in Texas. But yeah.
But so, adding another, another 3,600.
I feel like you can't drive an electric car in Texas. I'm sorry, I'm making a total blanket statement about Texas. But
maybe that's part of the reason for the map that you see there. Which, by the way, for the audio listeners, has Texas pretty bare on charging stations.
Well, listen, in Texas's defense, it is enormous.
That's what I'm saying. You've got to have a big car to be in a big Texas.
I've driven through Texas, through all of Texas, and it takes
forever.
Days. It just never ends.
Very good point.
I love Texas.
198,000 pre-orders in 24 hours. That was as of 10:30 a.m. Pacific this morning. All those making a $1,000 deposit. That's compared to 50,580 cars delivered in 2015 alone. 198,000 compared to 50,000 that have actually delivered.
This is the price point that people can afford.
Exactly. Yep. So this is a big moment for Tesla. I think the challenge now is, that's a huge pre-order, and that's only going to continue to skyrocket. Elon is already saying, the wait time is growing rapidly, so get in there now. Now they just have to deliver, and the delivery is not this year; it's next year. So they have some time, but still, that's crazy that you're buying this far out in advance.
And
for
think
a car.
About the other cars in this price point. Like, we're thinking about BMW and Mercedes and Lexus. Like, that's the cars that the people have been, buying in that price point. Sure. And so now there's another sort of car to add to that list.
Yeah,
and a lot of those people have pre-ordered it. And so I'm wondering, if the other luxury car makers will be like, we are going to have to beef up our economical line, like the entry level, luxury car.
Mm-hmm.
And also, Tesla looks like a Porsche.
It's nice.
Yeah, it looks like really, really nice. I mean, it's got a nice style to it. So, and it's fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They don't make
cars. So it has a lot of, those qualities that is making me consider possibly.
Do it.
I would love it. I mean, I've said if the next car I get, I want to be electric. It's just I rent an apartment without a parking space. Like all the logistics of getting the charging.
It's
and
like
all
having
that
a child.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not there yet, but when I do get there, So
there you go. Yeah. Tesla will be waiting for you, Ron.
Hopefully.
With open arms.
Shifting gears a little bit here, Reddit has long been the proponent for free speech. And up until yesterday, its transparency report had included what many refer to as a warrant canary that stated that as of January 29th, 2015, the company had not received an NSA letter, a FISA order, or any classified request for information on its users. A gag order is actually associated with those types of requests, and that prevents the company from explicitly revealing publicly that they did, in fact, receive one of those orders. Its transparency report for the remainder of 2015 has that entire section removed, basically acting as a silent acknowledgement that during 2015, Reddit was likely the recipient of one of those orders. In other words, the canary has gone silent. That silence speaks volumes in this case. What do you guys think about this? I mean, Reddit has for so long been just right at the top of the discussion as far as like these internet forums, internet discussions where free speech is kind of top of mind.
Right. I mean, it's tough with the legal stuff. And if they get one of those things, how they respond to it.
What can you do?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it becomes this kind of situation where I doubt they want it. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Yeah. So, and if anything, I think it's just a testament to the conversations that are happening on Reddit now, the increasing amount of conversations that are happening on Reddit as it continues to grow and continues to have a larger kind of community. What do you think?
I agree.
Fair enough.
I agree.
Reddit CEO Steve Huffman actually took to a site discussion on this topic and basically said, I've been advised not to say anything on this matter, further kind of having people be like, okay, well, obviously there's something going on here. Reddit has also filed an amicus brief last month supporting Twitter, who's trying right now to get some sort of clarity around being able to, at the very least, tell users when they do have an order how many orders they've had, as opposed to what's required right now, which is like anywhere between 1 to 100 or 1 to 500 or 500 to 2,000 or whatever it is. It's this long blanket kind of area that's just way too obscure.
It's the conflict between the transparency that these communities want and what legally the companies that are getting them are allowed to do. I know Twitter and Reddit would love to say, number of requests we've gotten, 8 or 7 or, so you get an idea of it. But legally, they can get in the trouble for doing that. So it's murky. Yeah.
All right, so we've done an okay job not talking about Android for the most part. We talked about it a little bit with the BlackBerry story.
It was more BlackBerry than Android.
Yeah, but this was a little bit there. Yeah. But today does happen to be the official release date of the LG G5 Android handset. Flo, you have a pre-production version.
I do. It's buried in my purse right now at the other end of the studio.
That's okay. Okay, so you don't have it in hand, but you have it in purse.
I don't have it in hand, but I have it in purse.
It's on the premises.
And you've been spending some time with us. Now, one big kind of, I'd say, differentiator is LG's Friends. Explain a little bit about Friends and if this is something that the public is really going to sink its teeth into it.
So if you've ever wanted to make your phone feel at home and you wanted to get some friends, you could do that with the G5. you can choose from two modules right now, which pop in to the G5. Although, interestingly, the hi-fi module made by Bang & Olufsen has not passed the FCC yet. So working with the U.S. variants of the LG G5, which is, definitely that. The other friends include a Rolly Ball, which you can use to spy on your dog or check on your cat.
Have you played around with that?
I did not play around with it, but I asked if it goes downstairs, and they were like, no, you'll have to buy two, one for upstairs, one for downstairs.
It doesn't go back up.
I want it to do if I'm watching my cat. Anyway.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
In addition to a VR headset, which is not as, developed as even Samsung's Gear VR, and a 360 camera, which I also have here on the premises, but not in my hand.
That's okay.
I wanted to see the 360 camera.
That's okay. We'll see it afterwards.
We'll see it later. Yeah. Well, I can see it right there.
There we go.
It comes with a little holster.
Almost as good.
This is actually how our review unit showed up in this green box. It was very nicely packaged.
But all out like that? It showed up like that?
No. They all came in little bundles. Yeah, there's a camera module that you can tack on for like extra battery support and extra buttons. It definitely helps with gripping the phone. I still haven't looked up the price on those, which I apologize, but
on the Friends?
Yeah, on the Friends. But
I love the concept. I love it. I mean, we said this on All About Android when we were playing with taking the battery out and putting the battery in and out. I mean, it seems like a more consumer friendly What's the one? Project Aura.
Yeah.
Like this kind of snap and, you know, kind of plug and play kind
for
of, you know.
For specific reasons. Like, sure. I want better sound. I'm going to plug in the hi-fi.
I want better camera. I want to taunt my dog.
Android Police seems to be, I don't know if they're speculating here. They say it sounds like it'll be priced at $70 for the Cam Plus module. That would be kind of my guess for some of those, like $70, $100, $120.
Yeah,
maybe at the higher end.
I would have a hard time spending $100 or more on one of those.
On an attachment for your device. How about the fit and finish? Because when you're sliding something into the, like, I can just imagine if you're working with like multiple modules that you might have like gaps or
there's a gap. And David Ruddock of Android Police has called it the London look, which refers to so Revlon or Rimmel always has London models and they usually have a gap in the middle of their teeth, so they call it the London look.
Really?
Okay. I shouldn't have used that because I had to explain it too much, but
that's okay. I get it now.
But I saw what he was talking about, and yeah, it is kind of like it is kind of worrisome a little bit.
Yeah, that would get to me. Yeah. That would bug me as well.
Also, the phone feels really flimsy without its battery pack inside.
Without the battery. Take the battery out of any phone, it'll feel flimsy.
No, certainly, but compared to like using the Galaxy S7, now I'm not reviewing this phone. My boss, John Phillips, the EIC of PC World, he will be reviewing it, and I will be reviewing the Friends, but I, just coming off of the heels of the GS7,
Well, and you're a big Samsung fan.
You can't do that on this show. That's the other show, Ron. Anyway.
Careful.
Discounting that.
Yeah, it's not an inexpensive phone.
It's not an inexpensive phone, and that's what bugs me, is that these modules are $50 extra when you're already spending $700 for the phone outright.
Interesting.
Or whatever, $600. But it's still a lot of money. There we go. There's the Rimmel London look.
The gap in the front tooth.
Yes.
Anyways, I mean, is this going to resonate, you think, with people, or are they going to kind of forget
overall,
about it?
Coming from being an Android journalist perspective, this launch has been a little messy for LG, which is unfortunate because I think that the concept of this modular phone is amazing. I think it's great, and it's such a different thing to do that they have been doing the last couple years. So we'll see. The marketing is cute.
Yeah, no, I love everything about this. I think I love the innovation aspect. I love the customization aspect. Mm-hmm. I love the accessorizing aspect. I love the marketing has been the Jason Statham ads are a little weird.
It's weird, but it's funny.
But it's like good. I like it. I mean, I this again, we talk about this a lot on our other show on All About Android. Like, I want to see different things from phone manufacturers.
Yeah, and this is different.
This is so different. Yeah. So
there you go. And they come in really cute colors.
Yeah.
That helps.
It always
helps.
That's
a thing right now.
Yeah, a playful font on the battery.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
A playful font goes a long way, let me tell you.
So the LG G5 released today. I don't know if this convinced you to buy one or to steer clear, but there you go. You can get one now if you're curious.
I do need to mention something to all y'all who are Android users interested. The software update has not hit with the application drawer.
Oh, okay. So it's still app drawer-less.
Yes.
Okay. Well,
I think our review units don't have them yet. I don't know about the consumer.
I think they'll be fine.
They'll get through.
Where's my app drawer?
Yeah. Some people are very upset about that.
Yeah, I am.
All right. Coming up, we're going to chat with Sam Moscovich from Ars Technica about Quantum Break, as well as a deeper dive into Nintendo's mobile ambitions. But first, before we do that, let's take a minute to thank the sponsor of this episode, Tracker. With advancements in technology, you know, just think of all the smart things we have in our lives now. Smart cars, smart phones, smart homes. Losing something can make you feel a whole lot less than smart. Perfect example. I was out for the past week. Obviously, I wasn't on the show. I was in the mountains of Colorado. We had a rented vehicle. We had our keys kind of stashed away out of the reach of the kids in the mansion of a cabin we were staying at. Don't get me wrong. The cabin was awesome. But you take something tiny and critical like car keys, throw them into a huge, unfamiliar mansion, and you quickly realize how stressful it can be when you can't find your keys. The mountain's calling you. Those expensive lift tickets, well, they're practically melting away with every minute that you can't find your keys so you can hit the road. Just tack a tracker on your car keys when you rent that vehicle, and you'll always know where they are. Tracker makes losing things a thing of the past. It's a coin-sized device, locates misplaced keys, wallets, bags, computers in seconds. Pair Tracker to your iOS or Android device. Attach it to anything. It has a key loop or adhesive that you can use as well, and you'll find its precise location with the tap of a button. It's really that easy. If you lose your phone, you press the button on the tracker, and your phone rings, even when it's on silent. The Tracker Bravo is constructed with just beautiful anodized aluminum. It's super thin, very durable, and it keeps tracking all the time. With over 1.5 million devices, Tracker has the largest crowd GPS network in the world. So what does that mean? Your lost item shows up on a map, even if it's miles away. If an item goes missing, the Tracker app actually records its last known location on a map. And when another user of the Tracker app comes within 100 feet range of your lost item, you're going to get a GPS update of where your item actually is. So it's like crowdsourcing the location of your missing device or thing. Go to thetracker.com and never lose your possessions again. Plus, just for our audience, if you enter promo code TNT, you'll get 30% off your entire order. That's TheTracker, thetracker.com, promo code TNT for 30% off your entire Tracker order. And we thank Tracker for their support. All right, welcoming back to the show, Sam Moscovich, resident gaming expert with some awesome gaming news from the week that we've just completed, sort of. How's it going, Sam?
Good afternoon. I actually almost didn't call in because I have a terrible friend who has posted the impossiblest image of the card game set. Have you ever heard of the card game set?
No. Is this one that I have to buy quickly, or?
It's one of these. It's very educational friendly. It's very good for kids, and it'll wrap your brain in terms of matching shapes, colors, and shadings. It's designed for 12-year-old Sam in the weird special like gifted and talented crap classes that I took where were just full of weird brain teasers. So I apologize. I managed to show up like just in time for that ad break. So
that's okay, because you've opened my eyes to a new game. And honestly, as I'm looking at the cards myself, it reminds me of that scene from the beginning of the original Ghostbusters where they're showing the symbols. And
yes,
I don't know if there's as much mind tricks involved in this game, but
in Star Wars Episode 1 when they're testing Anakin for Jedi powers and he says,
I wouldn't remember. I only saw that once a long time ago and I gave up on it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's probably something like that.
I fell asleep during that one.
Well, we're happy to have you here, Sam. So stoked that you could peel yourself away from set for a few minutes here. First of all, you just posted a lengthy review of Quantum Break, which I have to say has some incredibly just nice, sharp-looking action scene renders based on what I saw in your article anyways. Tell us a little bit about your thoughts on the game.
Well, Quantum Break is from Remedy Entertainment, who put their name was on the map in 2001 thanks to Max Payne.
Okay.
That game series was the first to really go Matrix with the bullet time effect. You know, that was sort of the beginning of PlayStation 2 level graphics where you could have 3D stuff around so that a bullet time sort of slowdown time thing would actually work. They hadn't done much in the years following that. They had a game called Alan Wake, which was a little more of a noirish, hammy mystery set in a Twin Peaks sort of environment. And now Microsoft has taken them on to say, we're going to make the Xbox One look incredible with a game called Quantum Break, which sees them doing this mix of action scenes with weird time trickery and very involved plot. I was really hoping it would be good, but I also had no idea if it would actually be a game because it got announced and teased with no actual gameplay for years. It actually was announced, I think, at the very beginning of the Xbox One sort of announcement phase, back when the Kinect was still sort of a thing, if that goes to show how long ago that's been.
Wow.
So the game that you're looking at here, you're seeing all these shots of this guy who's, his name's Jack Joyce. He's got an older brother who's a super genius. He's played by, I cannot remember the actor's name, but an actual actor. That's all motion captured stuff there, with really cool motion capture stuff. So that his face looks incredible. In fact, there's two different galleries in the article because Microsoft provided a bunch of images that just look like a dude shooting other dudes. But the game, what I find is most impressive, when this guy, even in the middle of the game, as you press the controller, they've devoted a ton of horsepower to making him look realistic. The eyes are glossy in that realistic kind of way. The mouth movement, the clothing, eye and facial stuff. I point all that out because I wanted to have a game with such good looking stuff that also was really compelling story-wise, and that's sort of the best and worst of Quantum Break. You end up with a really interesting story of this guy, his older brother, and this sort of cop security mysterious woman, the sort of not like a romantic triangle, but sort of a support triangle that they each do for each other in terms of unraveling a time traveling sort of mystery. Unfortunately, the gallery you're not seeing is the live-action TV series that has also been wedged into the game, where you play for about an hour, hour and a half, maybe 2 hours, and then you'll get a break. And for about 22 minutes, a live-action show that involves some of the game's characters and plot plays out from the quote-unquote bad guy's perspective. This live-action show is garbage. It is horribly written. The directing, the cinematography is junk. The actors, they have some really good actors, including the, you saw one of them, a guy from one of the bad guys in The Wire. And
he's also in Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Like Littlefinger.
Yes, there's some good actors doing their best with just atrocious script. The reason they even put this live action show in is because they sell the game with this promise of choice mattering, that you make a decision right before one of these episodes that sends a supposed wedge between two evil decisions. Like the very first one puts you, you have a survivor of a terrible like thing that witnessed your bad company's crimes. What do you do with her? And whichever thing you choose sets everything else in motion, supposedly. The show, however, has been written with such generic links to that choice that you can tell that they've inserted little blue screen, green screen moments and little tiny snippets of dialogue that reflect that, oh, you made a choice that mostly doesn't matter. You still get these really overlong, boring car chases, which are full of Nissan cars, by the way. It's the most blatant ad placement I've ever seen. And really bad fight scenes. There's a whole plot with a character. By the way, the live action show focuses on people who aren't interesting in the game, including this mercenary who's suddenly gotten a change of heart, who his wife is pregnant, which you get to hear about 28 times. He lets you know that his wife is pregnant many, many times. And at one point, in the change of heart moment, a soldier is coming in, and he chokes this soldier to death. You watch him choke the guy to death in real time while a bunch of innocent people look on. It's just this really, it's just like a pinpoint little moment of everything wrong with this show that I think what happened, and I say this in my review, is that Exhibit showed up in a Microsoft board meeting room and said, yo, dog, I heard kids like their Xbox and their Netflix, so let's put something that's like Netflix in an Xbox game. And it totally misses the point of why I would want story in a game. So that's there's more to like the gameplay systems being disappointing and the graphic stuff being really cool, but it's just the exact sort of uneven thing that is going to let a lot of people down, but at least the story stuff at its best is worth some of the headaches.
That's interesting. If you're going to devote that much time and put that much emphasis on kind of developing a plot and a story with actors and everything, especially like I can't even imagine personally, and I know this is probably different from person to person, but playing a game, being super active and involved in it, and then hitting a point to where whether I wanted to sit back and watch or whether I wanted to continue playing, I had to sit back and watch for 25 minutes and watch a show. I understand it's all part of the kind of evolving kind of creation of the plot and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah. Very interesting. So, okay, so how about this? This one I know is going to at least set Flo on fire here a little bit because she's been very stoked. A few weeks back when Nintendo first released Miitomo in Japan, I had installed it on my device. Showed it off on the show very briefly. Admittedly, I hardly did the app justice at that point. Sam, you've spent a lot of time with Nintendo's first mobile app game, whatever you want to call it. What are your thoughts? What do you think it signals for Nintendo's future in the mobile space?
Well, I'm looking at it right now. I'm trying to show off my little mustachioed Samtomo.
Yeah, we can't quite see it.
No. I'm trying to get my angle. The mustache is very important.
Oh, I see.
There's a little mustached Samtomo right there hanging out. The first thing I've got to say, now that it's in the wild and in an American's hands, I cannot tell you how many people are really into messing with it in ways that are inappropriate for showing on your fine program. Miitomo is all about connecting to known friends. You have to approve people. And there's no friend code system like there was for the Wii, the Wii U, the 3DS. It's simply about what's your Twitter or Facebook. In fact, that's the only way you can add people is whether if there's a Twitter or Facebook connection. Huh. The result is that it doesn't censor. It assumes that everybody who's talking and communicating with each other knows each other. And so there's just no censorship of the words that are chosen at all. Plus, the game has a little synthesized voice that says everything out loud. I think there's been a lot of people who've really enjoyed the fact that the synthesized voice will say every one of the seven words that George Carlin says you can't say on TV. There I am hanging out, by the way. And I almost feel like it's become – because as a social networking service, it's very limited. You are asked these very pedestrian, boring questions about your daily life. And then once you answer them, you just get this stream of random people's questions and answers. There's no way to really tell. They don't come to you based on a voting way. So if a comment gets a bunch of likes, that isn't filtered to you faster. It's simply a stream of random questions and answers. And so the only thing that's really proven interesting to me is to see people treat this almost like modern art in terms of what happens when we take known entities like Nintendo-styled characters and have them talk about real social justice issues and sexualized content and cussing. And that's not something I got into my article so much. My article was mostly that I was sort of bored with it at first. But I find that the real social aspect of people kind of delighting in the lack of censorship and also trying to make something fun out of a pretty boring system, which, by the way, is mostly about answering questions, earning little coins, and using those coins to buy outfits. Or you can also use those coins to buy a like slot machine game that lets you possibly win an outfit for cheaper. It's not a very satisfying little slot machine thing, though.
Yeah, I've seen that the games aren't necessarily the most
Wait, hang on now. Before Flo responds to Sam's great comments, I would like to know, where can I get some popcorn here? Flo?
What do you have to say about
it? Well, I was going to actually say, I don't know if you saw, Sam, that some of the questions they ask, they get turned around. So, for instance, the question about, like, how many dozens of flowers you see in a field, when you're watching your friend answer the question, they answer it as this is how many people I expect to date in a lifetime. So it like tricks you. Mm. So I answered like 185 dozen, and it's like, this is how, and it told my friends, this is how many people Flo expects to date in her lifetime, 185 dozen, which is like.
So you answered one question and then it posed it, as another question.
Oh, interesting.
I was wondering about that because I never actually got that question.
Yeah.
But I saw people talking about how many people they want to date.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's them just really wanting to beat Google to the punch on that whole weird April Fool's thing that went awry this morning or what. But that, yeah, that's a nice amount of ingenuity that I appreciate.
I will say, interestingly, so a couple of us have gotten on it in the last couple of days, and we've honestly, I'm like having full threaded conversations with people in Mitomo right now. Like me and Nate, OG from the Wall Street Journal, mm-hmm. we've been having conversations back and forth about like where we want to go travel and like different foods that we'd like to eat. And
all the while, your me is just basically saying all the words out loud to you.
Yes, but I'm typing everything. That's me typing everything in. And I learned that you can upload your own photos. So I've been like uploading memes and stuff to like people's. So I'm having total fun with it. It's like another form of Facebook for me.
Quite but honestly. Have you been on Snapchat very much?
Because oh, yeah, I use it all the time.
Because to me, it just seems like a really limited Snapchat. It seems like, oh, well, you like this connection to your me character, so we're going to let you upload images and stickers and do questions and answers. But ultimately, I think my issue with it is that I see the fun in it right now, and I'm guessing everyone I know is going to stop using it in about 2 days. And so that's the problem for me in terms of, because I'm not expecting it to be, okay, here's a serious game. This is, you know, Mario 4 or something like that. Nintendo has its streak of Animal Crossings, Tomodachi Life, these sort of life sims. But I wanted something that was a little more in that direction of, okay, I have a little house, let me decorate it. I have this interaction with friends, let me find another sort of Nintendo-like system with it. Instead, it just feels like I'm going to go back to Snapchat for this specific sort of silliness in very soon. I mean, do you see yourself really after these first few days of excitement going, this system is built for me to keep using it? Because for me, it's like, I think it's a pain in the butt to find like the conversations I want with my friends. And that's what makes me go, eh.
Yes. So I've been actually using it for 2 weeks because I downloaded the Japanese APK. And it's honestly, I use it like when I'm on public transit, I'm just like bored listening to a podcast. It kind of just keeps me busy, just kind of like how I use Snapchat. So it's just another... It's just another way for me to have fun, and I hope that Nintendo will just keep updating it and adding things so that we can have our own little like houses, you know. Yeah. And I'm totally into customizing my character. I'm putting on a new outfit every day, and I just like spend all of my coins. I'm totally into it. I even match her makeup. I go in and I change her makeup so it matches like what she's wearing. So I'm getting a lot of fun out of it.
Yeah.
It's just another silly thing for me to pass the time when I'm on transit or when I am kind of procrastinating at work. Sorry, boss.
it just reminds me again. Earlier this week, I tweeted because I've been playing with Snapchat after our conversations and some other conversations. And this reminds me of my reaction to Snapchat, which is there was an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm where he's texting with one of his producer's teenage daughter. And the teenage daughter texts him and says, do you watch Wizards of Waverly Place? It's a great show. And he writes in all caps, I do not watch Wizards of Waverly Place. I am an adult! ! It's like, I just can't.
Just haven't come around to it yet, Ron. Yeah, You'll get there.
Exactly.
Now, finally, this was the week that VR fans have been waiting for, obviously, literally for years. Oculus Rift has been discussed on the show all week in some fashion, thanks to its official launch. But you, Sam, being our returning gaming expert, I'm curious to know how you think the launch has been for such a highly anticipated piece of hardware, how it, you know, stacks up, especially considering the short-term release of the device with an Xbox 360 controller. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I got to play with the final Oculus just a bit. I was not sent the Ars Technica copy. That's gone into Kyle Orland's hands, and he wore the heck out of it. He and I are different, I'm finding, about being the canary in the coal mine, which is the phrase that a lot of VR developers are using about who gets sick. Like, who do we give a game to and test out in terms of average sickness experience? Every single time I actually was just in Los Angeles hanging out with a studio making games for a bunch of virtual reality stuff, and I'll be talking about that pretty soon. But they had an Oculus around, and I was just killing time messing with it. I cannot get over how its webcam system tracks the head. It is not one-to-one. And when I am sitting down and just using a controller, I have less abstraction of, for example, hand stuff to distract me from any time I move my head the slightest bit and the image swivels around in my head just the tiniest bit. It is so noticeable. I'm not sure how that's going to play out through for a lot of other users. But I do think nausea when you're sitting down is going to continue to be the thing that is talked about as more people and more people and more people enter the conversation, as opposed to sort of diehards who go, oh, it's not out yet. It's not official yet. Right. It's going to come in a year. It's going to come in a year and a half. We'll be more forgiving. No, no, it's out. This is officially time to say it costs $600. What's it going to do to my head? To that effect, I've been playing with the Vive Pre. I wore it while talking to you once because I'm obnoxious like that. Ars Technica's full review of that is going to come, of the final consumer version, which we also just got. There's a giant box over there full of toys. But for what I can say about the preview hardware, and I'm allowed to talk about that, is that having my things in my hands, being able to walk around at all, and having these sort of above my head tracking things on both sides, as opposed to Oculus, which just has one little webcam, it changes the way it tracks. And I think that is matters first for sickness, but second for the way I control. Because with the Xbox controller that you're talking about, that's what you use for Oculus now. That will change when they have a motion controller come. But for now, it is I am playing the same sorts of games with the same sorts of control systems. I need this joystick to move. I need these buttons to do things. There's crouching that's simulated. There's all these sorts of real-life actions that we're still simulating with a joystick. Therefore, the games to me they're not revolutionary. They're maybe evolutionary. But once you get these things in your hands, you are actually ducking your body. You are actually going this way. You are stretching. You are doing things with your hands that used to require like three or four buttons. And so you go, okay, well, how's the game different? And next week, I think we're going to be talking a lot about how games are going to be so different once your hands are doing the work.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that.
Yeah, well, Ron. From a hands doing the work and from an interface standpoint, I thought this was interesting as well. So, you know, with the release of Oculus VR, actually a buddy of mine, my friend Jeremy, who's in my pinball league, he does a lot of work with the guys at Tested, with the guys, the other guy from Mythbusters. And he put together something called PinSim, which is a virtual pinball machine controller for Oculus. And if you scroll down, there's a photo gallery on the article. It was covered in a lot of the press for the past couple of days. And there's also a video, but he's a big pinball guy. He's got pinball machines. He knows how to fix them. He built just the front section of a pinball machine with the legs and with the flipper buttons, and it hooks up to Oculus. And then it works with which of the pinball software it is. Yeah, it's Pinball FX2 VR. And so, yeah, so in the video here, you see the guy on the right he's controlling it. On the left, that's what he's seeing in Oculus. And as he moves, he looks up and down and can see the pinball machine and all that sort of stuff. And the funny thing was, I was hanging out with Jeremy on Wednesday night, and he's like, I'm surprised myself. He's like, it's a lot better than I thought it would be. Like, it's really like playing pinball.
Wow.
So,
Absolutely. Once you have those things in your hands as well. I mean, the idea that Oculus or Vive or any of these is expensive. As soon as you get a pinball enthusiast there, they go, I would spend $1,200 on one of these cabinets anyway. Yeah. So hook me up. Because
the interesting thing is, like, for, you know, and people know me, I play pinball. I'm a big pinball fan. If you want a pinball machine, that's on average a $5,000 purchase. You know, but if you spend the $600 on Oculus and you have the computer to run it, and Jeremy's kit is, I think it's $100 of parts, you could have any pinball machine that's made just virtually.
I might have to let you guys go so I have more bandwidth to rush to their order page.
It's very cool.
All right, we can do that, Sam. Actually, no, that's fantastic. Isn't that neat? I love it. For a split second, I was like, you could do this with arcade games, but then I'm getting a MAME cabinet, and that's like actual real simulation in reality. So, Sam, always a pleasure getting you on the show. Thanks so much for coming on, just talking about all this gaming stuff with us. Tell people where they can find all your work online.
Sam Red is my handle on the Twitter. That's also my handle on Miitomo. So if for any reason I will continue playing with it,
let's be friends.
Come find me.
I'm going to find you.
Ask, You know what I'm hoping? I'm hoping that you and I each exchange questions and answers to totally different questions so we can have a very confusing new friendship.
Yes. Yay. And,
but yeah, Ars Technica, I'm there all the time. I'm going to go put on a bunch of headset stuff right now because I have a lot of VR to play before the Tuesday launch of the Vive. So that's talk right. to you guys about that next week.
Sounds great, Sam. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon. Have fun. All right, TNT's fan of the day is at Malice Pumila LLC on Twitter, who says he's, quote, getting tech-jucated. He made up a word, tech-jucated, by watching TNT while coding for the iPhone by the looks of his laptop and iPhone environment on his big desktop screen. That's how you do it right there, folks. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video, take a picture of yourself or your setup, or your coding environment, post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook, and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT, and we will find it. And finally, we can't end a tech show on a day like April Fool's and not at least address what has become quite a ritual in the tech world. Pranks, jokes, fake products by the companies we cover on the show every single day. And let's be honest, people are very divided about whether they like this kind of day, these jokes or not. So let's first talk about what happens when April Fool's Day goes wrong.
When it backfires.
Yeah, Google usually posts a number of highly produced April Fool's jokes every year across all of its platforms on April 1st. Last night, shortly after the stroke of midnight, I believe Eastern, Google rolled out one joke to Gmail users called Mic Drop. It sounded harmless enough, I'm sure, anyways, to the people that created it. It would replace the send and archive button in the Gmail interface with an orange send button that includes a picture of a mic that's, well, dropping, of course. When an email was sent using that button, an animated GIF of a minion dropping a mic was attached to the email content and then sent to the recipients. Also, all future replies to that email were muted. So no matter what, if somebody replied to it, you would not know. It would be muted. You would not see it. You can imagine how easy it is to do this just by accident to something very important.
And that happened, and people, someone lost their job.
Someone lost their job. They were a writer, and they didn't hear back from their editor.
There was someone who does, like, a daily prayer email or something like that.
That's really bad.
And what's so funny is that I woke so I was up late working last night, and I saw this pop up on Gmail, like, at midnight or whatever. And I was like, oh, that's funny. If anything, I was like, oh, so this is what the evolution of animated GIFs, this is where we're at now. And we went to bed, wake up the next morning, and I had an email from someone who was like, I'm seeing what this does and whatever. And so I got up 7:30 our time, and I look, and it had already been shut down, and already all the horror stories have already been, and I was like, wow, that just backfired badly.
Yeah. I mean, it's one thing to, like, put out a video, like, here's our funny fake product. It's another thing to, like, bake it into something as critical. And it's even another functional thing to just, like, change an icon in a Maps interface, because that's funny, but that doesn't really change the functionality.
Or add a layer of Pokemon or right. do whatever you want to do. But, like, to change the functionality and fundamentally change the way it works. And the thing is that, like, I bet you, I know if you're like me, I'm muscle memory.
Right.
It
replaced
true.
The send in an archive button. I just clicked that button without looking, not noticing that it's orange and has a mic. Oh, that's weird. Click. Mm-hmm. You know, and just and so it's this was a step too far, and I'm hoping that now because I
tally, or are we humorless?
Well, no,
are we humorless, Ron?
Because here's the thing: is like, because we were talking about an email earlier, and like I used to love the April Fool stuff is a ton of fun, and when done well, it can be really good, but it's out of control now. It's completely out of control. Like Google did eight individual pranks today through their different business units. That's too much.
That's people devoted to making pranks than when they should be. Fixing bugs.
Google did the mic drop. They did Google Photos emoji search, Google smart reply emoji, Google self-driving bike, Google's cardboard plastic.
Which I liked.
Google Play Books introduces real books. Google search for your socks. Like,
so almost like every team is allowed to have one prank, and that
sounds
in
like
aggregate.
A great idea, Fred. Let's put that one in the books.
Right. And then Google wasn't the only company. I mean, like Hulu turned into a dating site, which was somewhat amusing. I mean, you know, like things like I don't know. I
liked Atlassian had like their own like Tinder thing, which I was just like, oh lord.
YouTube did Snoopavision.
Uh-huh.
Where you could turn on commentary by Snoop Dogg.
Well, that's funny. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. That's a good April Fool's
joke. I thought that was pretty good. Yeah. I liked Lairbnb, which is Airbnb for like villains and superheroes and vampires where they could trade lairs. Yep. I thought that was
I know this is a family show, but Pornhub became Cornhub.
Do I ask or do I just move on?
Just move on.
Okay, all right.
Moving on. But no, but what was funny was that some of them made me laugh, and one of them actually wasn't really tech related, but every year, I'm also a big music fan. Every year, April 1st is now becoming the day of who can come up with the most convincing and clever rumor for Fugazi getting back together.
Oh.
I will give credit to Fact Magazine that did an article saying that Fugazi's ending their hiatus to do a 5-song EP in response to the horror show of the U.S. presidential race. Okay. And the EP is called and the EP's got an old picture of Donald Trump on the cover. And apparently being very political.
I can see Fugazi doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, the big
yeah, so that one got me. That was fun.
All right. So 2017, yay or nay, April Fool's pranks.
Dial it back. Do one.
I am bummed I didn't do mine. I had a really, really good one.
What was it?
Think twice about doing it next year.
It's not going to be relevant.
I'm not going to do it next year. Yeah. And I don't want to give it away because we still want to do an article about it.
Don't let someone have your gold.
The only thing, what's become of the increase in volume of April Fool's pranks, I'm not so much worried about the pranks or annoyed by the pranks. I'm more annoyed by my entire feed of people complaining about, oh, I can't read the internet today.
Yeah.
Like, I could do without that.
Yeah.
I got to be honest, though. I opened my inbox and it was like, April Fool's. And I'm like, guys, I rely on press releases for like a living. Can we just like be, you know?
Yeah.
Dial it back
a little bit. It's not funny, yep. John Laguerre of T-Mobile.
As funny as you think it is. Hey, this was a fun kind of
fun
like alternate universe episode of TNT / All About Android.
It's really weird not talking about Android.
I love it. It's great. I could talk about lots of things all the time.
No, I know. It's great. Yeah, I'm so glad we have other interests.
I know. Yeah. Really, we're well-rounded.
It's good for us.
I know.
It's healthy.
Ron, what other things do you talk about in your spare time?
In my spare time, well, this is great. This is a different audience, different and a non-Android audience. I could talk about it in my day job. Go check out getdrop.com, where I work for a great company called Drop Kitchen, where we've got an awesome iOS app that is a recipes app. If you like to cook, you should check out Drop Recipes. And there's also the Drop Scale, which is a Bluetooth scale that connects to the app and allows you to have really accurate recipe measurement. So if you have an iPhone or an iPad, definitely check that out. It's super cool. And we're working on the Android stuff. So cool stuff coming. Do that by day, but at night and in my spare time, I also do other podcasts. I mentioned before iFanboy, but also Goodfellas Minute, which is the podcast where we analyze the movie Goodfellas minute by minute. And next week is our last week. We'll be wrapping up the movie by next Friday, but it's not going anywhere. So if you didn't listen, you can go back at the beginning and start. It's going to be evergreen. And it's also the first podcast that I ever ended. I've never ended a podcast.
Oh my gosh.
In 10 years of podcasting, we did our last
episode.
And this is
going to live on forever.
Hopefully, as long as I pay the server bill.
Yeah.
So.
Upload to Internet Archive or something like that, and then it'll be there forever.
It's a couple of bucks. It's fine. But yeah, check that out. If you like Martin Scorsese or movies or anything like that, it's worth checking. You know, it was a lot of fun.
Fantastic. You'll have to ask yourself, you'll have to think twice about picking a new movie and doing it again.
That's
150 episodes is a lot.
Well, no, actually, currently right now, everyone wants to know what we're going to do next. They want to do Casino. They want to do Godfather, all this stuff. I have an idea. I want to start a podcast called Dissecting November Rain, where I analyze the music video November Rain shot by shot.
Oh my gosh.
I love that video.
I think you figured something out, though, is that breaking long or even short things down to like single scenes or single shots or whatever, that's like mountains of content.
Exactly.
Florence, Flo, as we call you on All About Android all the time, what are some of the other things that you do?
What are the other things that I do? Well, I'm on All About Android every Tuesday. I am the Android reporter for PCWorld.com and Greenbot.com, and right now I'm working on a huge project. I am comparing the iPhone 6S to the Galaxy S7. I try to do one of these big projects every year between the Android quote-unquote off-season, so please stay tuned for that. It's not coming out for a while because right now I have 600 photos to go through.
Woo!
All different histograms and things like that. But the nice thing about it is I'm taking this time with a bunch of camera experts to really learn how to look at histograms and to look at the different variables that play into the differences in camera lenses because I want to make my reviews better for all of you looking for Android phones. So,
excellent. Greenbot.com. Find it there. Thanks to you both. Really appreciate you guys coming all the way up here. And that traffic was no joke either. So
anything for you, Jason.
Yeah, anything for you. Kidney. Some okay, of my we'll liver.
Talk. We'll talk. Just some of your liver.
Grows back.
All right. Monday's guest after the weekend, of course, will be Dan Patterson from Tech Republic. He's going to be joining me. Megan's not going to be back quite yet. But Dan and I are going to hold down the fort, and she'll be back on Tuesday. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 12 a.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be a part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail. That's 260-TNT-SHOW. And you can find the show on Twitter. We are at TechNewsTodayTV. Of course, you can always subscribe to this show, and we hope that you do. That's at twit.tv/TNT. You know, we've got a newsletter, twit.tv/newsletter. All the different places you want to go. But if you want to follow me personally, I'm on Twitter at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director, Kara Cole, and all the folks who help us produce this show every single day. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all on Monday. Bye, everyone.
Woohoo!
High five!
Woo!
Let's do it.